Well, Judy Bentley, you had a chance to see both the defendant, Terry Nichols, and Michael Fournier. You were pretty close in that little courtroom, I bet.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot smaller than I expected it to be.
Yeah, that courtroom, that's an old courthouse in McAllister. And I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, did they ever look at each other?
No, not at all.
Did you feel some tension between them, or?
Well, I don't know if you felt it exactly, but it seemed like, you know, that it should have been there, you know?
Now, how did, Fournier, of course, is escorted in by marshals.
Oh, yeah.
They got him guarded pretty heavily. And Nichols,
very calm. Surprising.
Well, he's had plenty of time. This trial's been going on for a while.
I guess so. He was talking with his attorneys and smiling and, you know, I mean, not all the time, but...
Now, you were there when the defense questioned Fournier, the cross-examination.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that in a minute. But, well, now, Nichols has three very good attorneys, Judy, Creepmore Wallace, and, of course, Barbara Bergman is helping along, and the lead attorney is Brian Hernison. And they do a pretty good job. What about the prosecution?
I believe there were two women and maybe two men.
Yeah, I know they had four prosecutors. I know of Sandra Elliott and Suzanne Lister. And I don't know the two guys' names. Now, you were there when the defense questioned Fournier, the cross-examination.
Yes.
Yeah, now, Judge Stephen Taylor said that most of the claimed new evidence was not new at all. And he said there was no such videotape, so evidently he's buying into the prosecution. You know, the prosecution spent several hours with FBI agents saying they didn't know anything about a tape. In fact, I don't know if they ever really got to enter into as evidence the news articles from the Associated Press reporter or J.D. Cash. So as far as the judge is concerned, I guess I never really made it into evidence. But there is a Secret Service memo. And we have some more information about that over on the website. But let's talk a little bit about the whole flavor of the whole thing. I guess there were some victims, relatives of the victims there at the trial, too.
And victims as well.
And the press. Lots of press, I imagine. What was the deal about didn't the judge stop and talk to the jurors again before he started trial?
Started about 9 o'clock, and about 9:10, he called a recess until about 10:10, and he took the jurors back and talked to them about that. You know, had they heard anything about the trial, or, you know, from anybody outside or from the media, or had they seen anything? And five of the jurors raised their hands, and so that's why he called the recess. And he went out and he talked to each one of them. When he came back in, he said that he had spoke with each one of them individually.
Now, the press, you had a chance to visit with some of them. Do you feel like they're pretty objective?
Yeah, I think so.
How do you get a feeling? Did any of them say how they thought the trial was going? I mean, everybody seems to think it's a slam dunk.
Yeah. No, they didn't get into any of that.
Now, as far as, you know, the atmosphere in the courtroom, Fournier, when he was cross-examined by the attorney, Nichols, how was his demeanor?
He seemed calm, except it seemed like as the attorney continued to question him, and as it got closer to the, you know, to when he was going to start questioning him about bombing and all that, he got a little fidgety, a little bit nervous, I think, more so than he had been early on.
What was your personal opinion if you were a juror? Were you buying what Fournier was saying?
Well, yeah, I think he was telling the truth.
Now, Judy, Fournier, he testified, didn't he, that he was high on drugs the morning of the Oklahoma City bombing. He was sitting there getting high, watching the coverage on television. Isn't that right?
He did. Yes, he had been on crystal meth. And
now, I do believe that Fournier did say that he had actually never discussed the Oklahoma City bombing with Nichols at all.
Right.
And basically, his testimony is third party. In other words, it's what McVeigh tells him, and he's relating that at that point.
Right.
How was the defense reaction when the judge refused to dismiss it? Did they look like they figured that's what was going to happen?
Pretty much. Sure.
What do you think about the prosecutors? What kind of demeanor do they have?
Well, you didn't really hear much from them. I mean, they were just there. But this one female prosecutor was objecting a lot, and there were several sidebars.
Yeah, they probably would try to keep the thing focused on what it was, as far without, and the defense, of course, their job would be to get it as far afield as possible to talk about some of these extenuating circumstances.
Right.
Was there a big crowd to get in that courtroom?
No, not really. It was, it pretty well filled up, though. But no, it wasn't hard to get in at all. They just wouldn't allow you to take anything in there.
Security was pretty tight.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't take your phones, you couldn't take your cameras, nothing, you know. And you couldn't get around to where they brought them in or anything to where you could take pictures.
Fournier and Nichols, they never really even looked at each other once?
Not that I saw.
Just kind of stared away from each other.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, could you tell the reaction of the jurors, what they were doing? Were they paying attention?
They were mostly writing notes.
And so were you.
They were paying attention, but they were writing notes as well.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to get a flavor of the whole thing. 48 younger than Nichols, right? I mean, 14 or 15 years younger.
Yeah.
And I guess they were all in the Army together there at Fort Riley in Kansas, but 48 said he really didn't know Nichols that well, I don't think. Did the defense get into any of the questioning about some of the other people there in Kingman that... McVeigh and Nichols knew, and 48?
Not much, no. No, uh-uh. It seemed like that 48 mostly talked about McVeigh. Some about Perry Nichols, but, I mean, you know, McVeigh was...
Well, McVeigh and 48 were buddies.
Right.
And as Nichols, you know, did not discuss this with...
Right.
48, basically 48 saying that McVeigh told him that Nichols would do this and do that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess McVeigh told him that Nichols and McVeigh robbed some places.
They talked about robbing some guy in, was it in...
Did the defense try to get into that? Did they try to shake him on that? The gun dealer couldn't identify Nichols. But of course, that's basically a rehash of what happened in the federal trial.
Oh, absolutely,
trial.
Yeah.
Just an overall, we got to go here, but I just wanted to get an overall impression about the judge you thought had a good demeanor and... You thought he was pretty much in control of the case.
He seems to, yeah.
And as far as Nichols, do you think Nichols has adequate representation?
Yeah, I think they're trying to do their job, you know.
Well, Judy, thanks for giving us an impression, and thanks for giving us lots of news stories on this. A lot of new things happening every day, and of course, the defense will be starting soon.
Yes.
And at first Monday of May, I believe, they'll be starting the defense case. So right now it's been all prosecution, even though there have been lots of sideshows going on. Anything you down there that you picked up that maybe you could pass on to us? Anybody got any wild rumors or anything?
Oh, no, nothing. Just the trial, you know, going on.
Well, Judy,